This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Xiaoning and Chuang. It's now 7:47 in the morning, Wednesday, the 8th of July. And we are going to have a look at our poll, which this morning is about the economy. Because coincidentally, last night, Bank Negara did cut its overnight policy rate. But we are asking you whether the Malaysian economy will get better or worse in the second half of 2020. And so far, we've had more, 115 votes, where sadly, 40% say it's going to be worse. 35% say it's going to be better, and 25% don't know. So, you still have time to vote. Do let us know what you think about this. But like I said, yesterday Bank Negara cut its overnight policy rate by 25 basis points to what is a record low of 1.75%. And this is the third time Bank Negara has cut this rate this year.
Yeah, the commentary and the tone of the country was actually quite bleak. And I think that the central bank's got another two more meetings so far this year, remaining for this year, which gives it more opportunity to cut. And some economists are actually expecting another cut by the end of this year.
Yeah, so for more insight on this, we are going to speak to Julia Goh, senior economist at UOB Malaysia. Julia, thanks for joining us on the show. Hello, Julia. Oh, we might seem to have not gotten her. In the meantime, well, what we do know is that the note that Bank Negara usually releases when it comes to, any OPR cut was rather dire. It was as if, the Bank Negara is very cognizant over the fact that, things are going to be not so great in the second half of the year.
Yeah, and of course, when you cut interest rates, the net result is that there's going to be more liquidity in the system. There's two kinds, right? The existing kind is when you have existing loans and then your installments decrease, so you've got more money to spend, disposable income. The other kind is that with interest rates low, you're then compelled to borrow more money because it's cheaper money, right? So given the sentiment of the situation, one would assume that it's actually more a case of pandering to the former than to the latter.
But I also noticed that the statement was, the word used is, I think, in technical terms, we call it very dovish, right? So the point is, it seems as if Bank Negara knows something that we don't, that the second half will be particularly weak. And what worries me is, we are still in this nice era of loan moratorium. What's going to be happening after that? But I think we have Julia go back online. Julia, are you there?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, finally. Thanks for joining us this morning. I want to start by asking you, this overnight policy rate cut to 1.75%, this is a record low for Bank Negara. Is this a preemptive move by them?
Yes, it is a record low. And I think Bank Negara has proven to be ahead of the curve, and they have cut rates successively. This is the fourth time they have cut to date. I think, yes, in a way, it is preemptive because the reasons given were that they want to accelerate the pace of economic recovery. I guess there's still a lot of uncertainty about growth, even though we are currently in the recovery phase. A lot of uncertainty ahead, and I suppose this rate cut is supposed to help ensure that recovery continues.
Julia, there's another couple more MPC meetings from Bank Negara by the end of this year. Two more, actually. What are your expectations in terms of further reducing interest rates?
Well, Bank Negara kept the door open, and they continue to cite a lot of uncertainty ahead. So on that basis, we feel that there is still a possibility that Bank Negara may reduce rates again. After four cuts, a total of 125 basis points to date, we feel that further rate cuts may have, a diminishing benefit. As you mentioned earlier, it will help, in terms of loan repayments and so forth after the loan moratorium ends. But as they keep the door open and they projected a deflation this year, and given the growth uncertainties, I think we are now expecting a possibility of another rate cut before the year ends.
Yeah, Julia, as you mentioned, right, there's a law of diminishing returns where rate cuts are concerned, but of the three or four that already announced so far this year, from the data that you have in front of you, do you think it's had the desired effect in terms of more liquidity in the system, more confidence in the system?
Well, I mean, confidence is definitely one thing. But, you know, when we speak to businesses, we speak to friends, individuals, even cutting rates this low, I don't think, it doesn't seem that they feel ready to make a big commitment. If it's a business, ready to expand or rehire, and if it's an individual to take on, let's say, a new housing loan or purchase a new car, there's still a lot of uncertainty. And I think for individuals, probably the job and the labor market outlook is probably one of the biggest uncertainties at this point.
And Julia, since we're on the topic of consumption, right, have you seen any signs of it improving or picking up since the RMCO?
We are seeing some signs of higher mobility and footprint as people adjust to the new normal. So ever since the relaxation of MCO in May, I think we are seeing that, people coming out, returning to work, and even trade flows are gradually recovering as activity picks up. But it's still quite uneven and slow in certain segments. So let me give you an example. Obviously, groceries, pharmacy are likely to see the highest traction, while retail, recreation, social activities may still be lagging, and spending will also be affected, given the job losses and the wage cuts. And also households are probably still trying to rebuild their savings, or even in certain cases, digging into savings if they have lost their jobs. But nevertheless, I mean, it is moving in the right direction since the opening of the economy. So I think that is definitely one encouraging sign.
What about on the jobs front? I think unemployment data is around about 5%. What is your sense of rehirings? I know you touched on that earlier, but even just on perhaps on a contractual basis, what is your sense of the job market?
So the 5% unemployment rate you mentioned was actually recorded in April, and that was the first full month of the MCO. So information on the loss of employment data shows that a steep rise in number of people who lost their jobs, even in May and through June, after the reopening of sectors. And this is just for the formal employment sector. It doesn't capture job losses in the informal segments. So I think based on these trends that we see on loss of employment, I think would suggest that the unemployment rate could rise further, even during the recovery phase. And as I said, businesses, even though, you know, sectors have reopened, I think businesses are still very cautious given the economic uncertainty. Definitely the employee retention program, the wage subsidy programs launched by the government has helped over 2 million employees, I think, particularly in the month of April. And without which, probably the job losses could have been much higher.
And Julia, you know, the loan moratorium for houses and, you know, SMEs is set to end in September. Is this when we're going to see signs of economic weakness again? Because what it has given is a lot of breathing space for individuals and also small businesses, right?
Yes. I mean, the whole idea is that giving them the breathing space and hoping that as recovery picks up, that, it would be a lot easier for them once, loan moratorium ends, as we enter into fourth quarter, for them to resume repayments. As I said, obviously, activity is still quite uneven and it's probably slow in certain segments. So it's probably something to be watched. But so far, because of the freeze in repayments, you've seen that actually non-performing loans have actually inched down in the months of May. So I guess, yes, definitely something that bears watching as we move towards the end of the moratorium period.
Julie, you've mentioned that your preliminary estimates suggest that the contraction of -12% GDP for Q2 is in the offing. And of course, GDP will be announced on 12th of August next month. I think more importantly is Q3. What is your sense of Q3?
Well, our preliminary estimates are still looking at a contraction, a year-on-year contraction in Q3, definitely narrower, much narrower, before we see a slight growth in the fourth quarter. So for the full year, that's how we come to our 3.5 contraction for this year.
And thanks for joining us this morning, Julia. That was Julia Goh of UOB Malaysia. A bit of a somber note, right, regarding our economy. Looks like second half is going to be it's going to be soft for sure.
Yeah, I think Bank Negara really was preemptive. I mean, yesterday's meeting was the third for the year and they decided to do it then. Gives them room for one or two more. In fact, one at least one more before the end of the year.
But the point is the efficacy of each rate cut.
Yeah, there's a lot of diminishing returns. Yeah. And it's all about sentiment. I mean, would you be out going out to go and buy a new property now? Unless you're flush with the liquidity. But even then, right?
And the other worrying trend is, of course, the unemployment figures, right? Because they've been inching up in May and June. But this is just the formal sector. And we do know in Malaysia, a large part of the population work in informal sectors. So what about them? You know, this is really going to impact consumption, which is 60% of our Malaysian economy.
Yeah, I wonder if there's any bright spots out there, because it just seems to be all gloom and doom. And then when you analyze the share market, you think, you know, everything's awesome, right? Which when actually fundamentally is not.
Well, so like, you know, the US, we aren't very different, right? There is this disconnect between Main Street and, you know, Wall Street, even in Malaysia. It looks like the market rally even here seems to be still on the uptrend, regardless of how bad corporate results have been.
And I think what is interesting is that when Jack Cousy tried to rationalize the rally in the Chinese share market, it's something that was actually written about in Bloomberg's an op-ed columnist yesterday, saying that the domesticization of the Chinese economy, where the ties have been cut with the UK clients, with the US clients, now everything comes internal and it comes, you know, China side, right? And that engine, you know, there's a multiplication factor involved there, which explains the data, which explains the earnings, which explains the rise in the share market. And if the China population juggernaut believes in their economy, they start buying China and everything just booms.
But unfortunately, we're only a population of 32 million. Yeah, so it's a little bit harder for our domestic engine to be the only driver. We are still very dependent on global trade. But now we're heading into the 8 a.m. news bulletin. And after that, the breakfast grill, where Roshan Karnason speaks to Kasim Kasturi, CEO of Beacon House School Systems Group. Stay tuned for that, happening in a few minutes. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.